tradition is tradition. Of course, one of the traditions, we have a full-length conversation with both Tony Gelbart and Rabbi Yehoshua Josh Fass. They are the co-founders of Nefesh B'Nefesh. And we are on somewhat of a turbulent flight, but...
I think we should paint the picture here for a moment.
Go right ahead, Rabbi Fass, please.
This plane is bouncing up and down. Tony and I are cuddling in one seat.
Nobody ever wants to sit with me. It's amazing.
Yes.
Wait, just a second. I want to get my stomach. Okay.
Earlier, they wouldn't allow us to have guests on the air because of the turbulence. I said, oh, this is perfect. Josh and Tony will do it during turbulence.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Look at us.
They'll send the people in these seats up to theirs. All right, anyway, mazal tov to both of you. You mentioned it was flight number 64. Pretty significant number. Mazal tov to both of you. You also said, we thank you. I think it was a thank you, if I heard it correctly. We thank you for your Zionism. Optimism. What else did you say there at Kennedy Airport? Zionism, optimism.
Idealism.
Idealism, you said?
Yes.
Idealism.
Faith and hope.
And it's amazing that you're on a plane with a group of people, hundreds, that are doing exactly that, are putting their Zionism to the forefront, understanding the future of the Jewish peoples in the State of Israel, are acting optimistically. The people I've spoken to so far are really giddy with celebration.
And I think the most important thing also is the diversity on this plane. And as what I said at JFK also, just the unity that is created, bounded by this common action. And people want to plant themselves in Israel. They want to build their future and future generations in Israel. And it doesn't make a difference what their background is. There's tremendous love. There's respect. There is a real sense of achdut on this plane, and it's beautiful. It's mamash gorgeous.
I always wonder, and I talk about this all the time, hey, you're one of the few Jewish organizations that truly has representation across the board, every geographic, every educational, every type of background imaginable. And I wonder, Tony, if that was even a thought at the beginning of all this, meaning you're dreaming together, and you knew then the benefits of putting together a project like this and going forward. But did you ever dream that it would appeal to such a vast membership of the Jewish community when organizations don't always attract people of all stripes?
I know, excuse me, that you would like me to say, no, we never dreamed of that. But quite honestly, we saw it on the first flight. We saw it from the people who had the interest for making Aliyah.
Right.
It was a diversity from the very first flight.
Yeah, but even you have to admit that to make that last is an accomplishment.
Well, that's the difference. So that
flight 64 could look very different than flight number one.
Right, absolutely.
We were just discussing, I think 10 minutes ago, about there's an organization that wants us to partner with them. And we were discussing and saying, you know what, some of our Olim might feel that we're making a political statement or position.
Right.
And we have to decline. And it's an effort. There's a constant effort of making sure that we are open, embracing to every type of Jew, that they feel that we respect them, we value them, and they have a conduit and a bridge to move to Israel.
And to make it clear, you do seek partnerships. People shouldn't think you avoid partnerships.
Of course, dozens.
But when you apply at Nefesh B'Nefesh, there's no line that says, are you right-wing or left-wing? Are you a religious? You're not religious? Are you Ashkenazic or Sephardic? Are you, pro-reform?
Democrat or Republican?
Democrat? No. It doesn't ask you that. Are you Jewish and you love Israel? Welcome. Welcome.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what you got on the plane here. You have nothing more than that.
Yeah.
The love of Israel. And that's it.
See, I don't want to harp on it because we shouldn't, but I feel like I have to respond. That's the accomplishment. Because too many groups, efforts, I don't want to say organizations, too many efforts start this way and really do have an appeal to a diverse group. They're able to somehow, create an umbrella that's pretty impressive. And then, time marches on. And you continue down the road, and a lot of people fall by the wayside because you are focused to a certain niche, you're focused to a certain ideal, etc.
Yeah, but you can never pigeonhole the Jewish people in one little box. right?
But it's not always easy to remain open to the entire Jewish people. And that's
true.
What you've done.
That's true.
That's the whole thing. You can't. You certainly can't put them in a box.
Right.
But the question is, will everybody in the variety of boxes feel comfortable being in this flying box?
Right. Yeah.
And sure enough, thank God
they are.
Which
yeah.
is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, thank you very much there, Tony.
I mean, you know, you've been doing this for a few years, too, you know.
I spent 11 and a half months thinking of things to talk about with you guys.
I just have to adjust my seat for a second because it's getting a little too close.
You have a seat? Okay. I don't think we consider this a seat for my fans, but anyway.
It's an edge.
Okay, I'm standing up there.
One of the great fears, well, I know what you're going to say anyway, but I got to ask because it's an issue that everybody wants me to address with both of you. One of the great fears is housing prices in Israel. In other words, there are people with dreams, and there are people with goals, and there are people with timetables, with calendars, etc. When am I going? And this could be people in their 20s, it could be people in their 80s. And we see, thank God, I know it's a tremendous blessing, that the majority of metropolis areas in Israel, if we can call them a metropolis, are in fact overpriced, but very often out of people's price ranges. Now, you'll answer that there are options. South, north, areas we haven't heard of, some areas we have heard of. But for those who really want to be close to the action in a number of places, not just in Jerusalem, but a number of places, what could you tell them about 2023 and moving there and worried about what's happening in the housing market?
You want to go first?
I'll go first.
I have something to say.
2023, there isn't. There's no panacea. There's no easy solution, and it comes down to standard of life versus quality of living, and the values and the quality of life that person has. That you're going to reduce certain standards, certain comforts, certain luxuries that you used to have. If you need that, then you can't be in that iconic radius of where Anglos are moving.
Yeah, many radii.
Exactly. But you should just know that there doesn't go a week or 2 weeks that Tony and I do not raise this issue. It's something that we're trying to create a strategy of a model of success. There are ways of thinking out of the box to break some of the monopolies, to get land and developers rent with an option to buy, fixing prices for purchasing. It could be when we're able to do it, we have one other major project that we're about to launch in the next few weeks. Once that's launched, we can get on to this next project. And this next project, if it works, it can be a model, it can be a pilot for other communities, and also can push, maybe motivate the government to think out of the box as well.
And I was just about to say, I'm assuming these are negotiations with private entities as opposed to government, but now you just said that they're government entities involved.
You need to have government entities to get the land.
No choice.
No choice.
Obviously.
And you have to abide by certain rules and regulations of to make sure that it's legal of having certain populations move to a certain area.
When you're in the business of Aliyah, you need to have a private-public partnership, you know, government, because you're not just, you know, building a building and having people move to your building and making some profit. The profit for us is getting people into the right neighborhoods at the right cost, and right, and that means a lot. Right cost and right neighborhood means a lot for a lot of different people. It's very diverse. But the issue that we see, look, everything has a reason, and it starts differently, you know. 20 years ago, and I, you know, maybe I'll date it even a little longer than that, but, you know, Modin wasn't Modin. There was not a mall. There was not a train. So now Modin is Modin. It's very interesting. So that became the epicenter. That became the center. Jerusalem was a center. Now this is a center. And then Renan is a center, and all these people for Anglos. Mm-hmm. And we will build additional centers in different places of the country. I mean, think about it. I think we're roughly about 80,000 Olim, something like
80.
Over 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how big Maale Edomim is? I think we're 40,000, 45,000 people in Maale Edomim. So we're
2 Maale Edomims.
Not exactly.
For Nefesh B'Nefesh.
You know, and think about the 30,000 something plus babies that were born. So we know that housing is probably on the top 5 issues when you make Aliyah. I mean, you know, schooling, job, you know, those kind of things, and housing. So that's really important. And this week, we have a very important meeting coming up for a project, as Rabbi Fass said, We have one project to finish and launch in the next few weeks, and then we've a really amazing project which could make a game changer.
It's funny that you mentioned Modine. I remember 18 years ago, the mayor of Modine coming to our mega event in New Jersey, and he says, I want to sell this new project, Buchman. I want to sell
this. I remember that.
And I'm like, what? Yeah, what are you talking about? Buchman, who's moving?
Who's moving to Modine?
That was 18 years ago.
Yeah.
18, 19 years ago. What's it like flying? I mean, look, you've always had, thank God, beautiful facilities in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Obviously. What's it like flying, knowing that now you're heading to a Nefesh B'Nefesh campus to do your work, one that is the envy of almost all in Israel, and one that's attracting programming that you always dreamed about and now you're able to provide?
What?
No, before you answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
July.
What's that?
No, expansion? Just July. No, last month we had over 6,000 unique visitors to our campus. With programming.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, now go, Tony, go.
So what you discussed right in the beginning.
Just calibrating you.
No, but what you discussed in the beginning, that we could be diverse and maintain that diversity and all that. Well, it comes
to
the campus.
You're doing it on the campus, right?
It's exactly what's happening
on
the campus.
It's not just the plane, right?
Oh, no. It's not just the plane. This plane is just a microcosm of what goes on inside that campus. So for me, it's not it. You can have an office. I can have run my face and have an office here with the right equipment. It's not an office.
That's what's happening in the building.
We're going to the heartbeat of Aliyah and Nefesh B'Nefesh is that campus.
When we were designing the building, and the interior designer was asking, the values of the building. That's what they usually ask when they sketch out what, when they...
Interesting, yeah.
So I said, the charter flight. I explained to them what the charter flight experience was. I said, I want that every hour. I want that every hour of the day. I want the diversity. I want the openness. I want the respect. I want the professionalism. I want the emotion. I want the melding, the synergy between old and new. That is it. Make a charter flight campus.
And sure enough, that's exactly what's happened. Rabbi Josh Fest, Tony Gelbart, we're on the plane. I know it sounds funny, but this broadcast is actually being done, as is an annual tradition, on the flight. You're listening to a Wednesday morning edition of JM and the AM. I don't have to remind this audience, but hey, it's always worth a reminder that if you want to get in touch with Nefesh B'Nefesh, nbn.org.il. Again, it's nbn.org.il, 866-4-ALIYAH, 866, the number 4, and then A-L-I-Y-A-H. It's funny, I mean, we've been lauding for 20 years. I consider us partners, all of us.
Brothers.
Of course.
And in this partnership, for 20 years, we have been hammering home the message that you're going to make Aliyah easier, easier, easier. I didn't think there was another place to move the goalpost, yet you announced on this plane that now there's a new step that's been taken care of, and those who are making Aliyah will leave this plane with all their official documents. And that's unprecedented, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Never since the creation of the state of Israel has this happened. And you know what that means? It means the bottleneck when we land will be waiting for the suitcases to come onto the carousel.
And that is
that's it.
And that's it.
Think about that. We're going to get off the bus, get into the terminal, because we're going to the old terminal, so it's a bus, and we want the tarmac, embrace and kissing. And you get to the old terminal, and they'll be waiting for with their envelope waiting for them at the door.
And that is that.
And then that is that. Dancing, singing, no speeches.
No speeches.
Festive.
You've adjusted the welcoming ceremony over the years.
Only if we can do that in JFK, and then we'll be solid.
are speeches required at John F. Kennedy Airport? Is that the problem? Are they required there?
They're required for our... Listen, our partners...
They got to be recognized.
They want to be recognized. Right. They're investing, and they feel very emotionally attached. So for me and Tony, 30 seconds on a stage is all that we feel is necessary, and for just to have that touch base and that connection. But others, they need to have that feeling, and it's fine. It's fine.
Well, they want to get up and say thank you to them. They want to get up and
them.
Say, they're happy for
you.
Them.
Who I think benefits the most from your speeches? The family of those who are going.
That's what I said to someone today.
Yeah.
Someone said, aren't the Olim exhausted? I said, listen, it's the Olim will get on the plane and we'll get there. This is for the family and friends.
They need it.
They see how much they're valued, respected, admired. It gives them so much chizuk and strength to see, okay, my kid is not going alone and my kid's not doing something crazy. That we have delegation from the Israeli government. We have these massive partners who are hugging them, kissing them, escorting them onto the plane, joining them, accompanying them for the journey, it gives such a sense of sipuk nefesh and calming for the parents and for the greater family. So for them, I think the JFK ceremony
is like the entire country of Israel saying, you know, see you in Israel kind of thing.
It's a big send-off.
It's a send-off. Right.
And an appropriate send-off. Did you officially make Aliyah on flight number one, or you already had done Aliyah? Like, what was the...
Number one.
Sure. No, I don't mean as opposed
how
to number
dare
two.
You?
I didn't mean as opposed
how
to flight
you?
Two. I meant where you were actually.
I just made Aliyah 3 months ago.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
You were not. Oh gosh. This is now.
It's a baby.
This is now where Rabbi Fass allows.
I think it's the youngest Ole.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Gosh. The youngest Ole on the air.
Yeah.
Look
right
at this.
Be careful with that.
Look at this
the microphone. It's going right into her head over there. Oi. Oi. You okay there? See, now I'm experienced. I'm a grandfather.
Oh.
That's right. Two little granddaughters. Now I know the secrets of calming them down.
Do you want a little? You want? You're missing some of it?
Rabbi Fass, I have a professional setup here, Rabbi Fass. Come on. Let's be real. Come on.
Anybody got a diaper?
hoping that my grandchildren will live in Israel.
I'm stuck. Get off my lap. No.
You know what realization I had? Get off my lap. The quote of the trip.
Yeah, you're right.
My staff's going to ask, what's the quote of the trip?
Yeah, you're okay, but,
I'm not sure. We really have to take a picture of this so that you can explain.
Oh, Shachar.
You have to explain this to others so that get off my lap is understood later
right, nobody's
on.
Nobody's going to believe that they're in the same chair. Can you take some pictures, please? Please take
those. No, it's okay. At least the turbulence calmed down.
Yeah, that's good. Right.
I had a realization this week that floored me. And you know all the people involved, so you'll understand why it floored me.
Okay.
We're planning on making Aliyah. Rabbi Fass insisted that we actually announce it on the air, even though it's not happening for another 4 to 6 years. But all right, I follow his advice. He said to announce it. We announced it. And Stacy's thrilled with the announcement because she knows that we actually are going to wait till she retires. So she's happy with the whole thing.
Well, there are two steps. First is the announcement, and the second, I have to now reduce the time.
Six, realistically, does look like it could become four. I've studied this like crazy over the last couple of weeks.
Four becomes two.
Well, four, I think, once you're at four, you can make it three. The question is, can you get it to two? That's really the question.
Okay, we'll work on that.
But 4 to 3 would be the big leap. But all right, but
I'm
you
sorry,
and I will
we
discuss.
Digress. Go back to
what
your, we do. Go back.
So I say to one of my siblings, I say, to my brother, why am I holding back? I say to my brother, I say.
who just texted me like that?
Are you serious?
We're going back and forth.
The guy can't go to sleep.
This is Ali anniversary today.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
2005.
It's Egal's Ali anniversary.
Oh, 2005.
Wow. Yeah, he wanted me to know.
Instead of postponing, he can look back that he's here already for 18 years.
Wow.
Did I make a terrible mistake?
It's okay, go on.
But
anyway, we digress again.
But anyway, I say to him, I say, wow, you know, if I go, hopefully, one, two, three of my kids with it. He goes, well, you have no idea the feeling that every one of my children and grandchildren live in Israel. And I go, oh, my God, I never even thought of that before.
Wow.
Of course, I knew it, but it just hit me like, oh, my gosh, how lucky a man is he? And how lucky a wife does he have that they are parents and grandparents of people who live in Israel. Now, he will complain once in a while that his son is all the way up in Har Yonah. He may complain about
can't
that.
Have everything.
that's fun. I don't know if you're looking into that neighborhood, Rabbi Fass, but, you know, 700 shekel for a two-bedroom apartment ain't bad.
It's definitely affordable.
It's definitely affordable.
The new Modi'in.
I'll tell you. It's amazing what's going on up there.
Well, Nachum, I think you have a distinctive... I guess I'm right, but you can correct me, but I think you are... the first person who I don't think it's anybody else who's been on more Aliyah flights
than the two of you.
No, that hasn't made Aliyah yet.
Fake Aliyah,
well,
as I
no,
call
no,
it.
No, but you haven't made Aliyah, but you really know the experience.
Yeah,
I mean, you could see the experience.
But do you want to know something? And you I know you're saying it tongue-in-cheek, which I get.
I'm being very quiet.
No, I'm not saying it tongue-in-cheek.
No, I know
meant, I meant that, like...
Oh, yeah, there's no question.
It's being surrounded... It's hard not to make out, yeah.
Two things. First of all, being surrounded by is incredible, and you're 100% right. And I do think of the differences. It's going through my mind today. Yeah. How different it's going to be when Stacy's sitting next to me.
I was going
to
say that.
And we are actually... And that day is... I'm going to be crying that entire day. I'm going to be laughing.
I'm going to be crying. Balloon, chauffeur.
I'm going to be laughing that entire day. And God, we should get there. We should get there.
Amen.
Amen.
But when I walk off this plane every summer, and this guy at the bottom of the steps rolls his eyes at me, I want to tell you, that's not a good feeling, Tony.
I don't roll my eyes.
All, I didn't know you had that kind of relationship. I wasn't privy to that.
I don't have to roll my eyes.
I mean,
sees my face.
He looks at me with the look like, come on, it's time already. Of course I know it's time already. But
well, you know the routine.
That is.
You know the routine. Which how to make out.
Oh, this.
Yeah. So your experience.
You asked how we can make it even easier, right? We're doing a two-death delay on the plane, and now they don't have to wait.
So that project's over. So now it's on to the next project.
The next project is subconscious, you know, or unconscious, Elia. When you're napping on next charter flight, we're going to fingerprint you. You're going to wake up. You're going to come down. No more rolling of eyes. I'm just going to hand you your two-death delay.
But you don't know that I have secret information. And I know that the people leaving. And by the way.
What?
You're both citizens of Israel.
Yes.
So aren't you supposed to have a green...
Oh, we ran out.
Seriously? That's what happened?
Yeah.
Because the secret is...
No one knows what we're talking about.
I know, but I'm going to tell them right now.
Okay, fine.
If you're an American or any foreign country on this plane, and you don't have an Israeli passport, you have to wear a yellow lanyard with your badge.
Yes.
If you're like you, and
purple.
you had an up. I thought it's green.
It's purple.
Is it purple? Then you'd have to have a purple one on.
Correct.
Now, we didn't know you'd run out. That you wouldn't have, but I guess you'll rectify that situation.
We didn't really.
But now that I know, you just said too lazy to do it.
Yeah.
But now that I know the secret, if you do fingerprint and process me while I'm sleeping,
I will change your lanyard.
I'll be waking up with a green one, and I'll know the whole thing was done.
I'll just change the whole lanyard system just for you.
Fun and games on the Nefesh B'Nefesh flight.
Ridiculous.
So there you have it. All right, final message. Tony, Rabbi Fass, every time someone sits in this chair that both of you are sitting in, we ask them for a message for their age group. The 20-year-olds had a comment, the singles had a comment, the retirees had a comment. Obviously we have a diverse audience out there. What should everyone be thinking about in terms of their own plans for Aliyah? Both of you come at this from a completely different level, obviously. But let's get a couple of messages out there. Tony, what would you say to the people listening who have this mulling around in their brain for years, whether they should make this move or not? What would you say?
Well, you know what? Don't put off what you can do today and wait for tomorrow. Because if you think it's going to get easier, it's going to get better, it's going to be... something that you're always going to look back once you finally make the Aliyah, you know, plunge. You're going to look back and go, inevitably, I don't care if you're young.
Why didn't
I don't care if you're older. Why didn't I do it sooner? There is no, I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't say that. Why didn't I do it sooner? And it doesn't matter what age.
Yep.
You know? I'm 18 going, you know, to the Army. Boy, if I did this at 15, I learned Hebrew. Whoa, I would have been. Oh, why didn't I do this sooner? Oh, I had my friends. And then when you're elderly, oh, my gosh, I could have done it. I should have done it. Why didn't I do it?
I could be like my brother looking back on 18 years.
But you know what? Don't have sour grapes.
Right.
Just don't put it off. And if you're ready to do it, jump. You know, every move is scary. This is a very scary move for a lot of reasons. Not scary that, you know,
right.
I'm frightened. It's real. It's you're anxious to make it, you know, happen in the correct way, in the right way, the perfect way. Nothing's perfect. Nothing's 100%. You got to jump in the water to see if it's cold or hot, if it's your temperature.
Rabbi Fass?
I don't think... I don't want to address or have a message for those who are contemplating and been kicking around this idea of Aliyah for years. When the timing is right, you'll feel it. Things will click. It's like a relationship. I say this very often to Olim. You know when it's the right person. You know when it's the right time. It's an organic relationship that one has with Israel. And if you're considering it, contemplating, you'll know when it's the right time to take, as Tony said, the plunge and to make that decision. I think the message more is for people who can go around their day and their business and not even consider the concept of Aliyah. And I think that is not caustic, but that's what just is a bit flabbergasted. We are living in a time that we have a miraculous historic opportunity. And for those of us who pray every day, we've been praying for this. It's not that God is calling our bluff, but he's giving us the very thing that we've been dreaming about. Now, just consider it. It's okay if you consider it and say, it's not for me, it's not for us now. We have an issue with a child, we have an issue with a parent, I don't have a transferable occupation, whatever it is. That's fine if you just consider it and let and struggle with it. And have your children see that you struggle with it. That's the best education that you give and the greatest gift that you give to your kids. Even if you don't make Aliyah. Just yeah, having your children see, you know, the struggle, the internal struggle. You know, this is what we believe as an ideal. We cannot do this.
Yeah, we've always preached, have a plan. Let your kids see you have a plan. If it works out,
even
it works out.
Even if not have a plan. Just say that this is something that I aspire to, but it's not relevant to.
All right, now, I apologize in advance, but it's going to be a while now before I send you back to your seats because we have to continue this conversation, which I thought I was going to wrap up a moment ago. So I'm going to beg your indulgence because now you've hit on a couple of topics that we have to address. Number one, you want people to mull it over. You want people to consider. You want people to think about it. Unfortunately, leadership in North America does not always give that opportunity to people to think about it, to put it at the forefront. Of their plans, of their thoughts, etc. And I would appeal to those rabbinic and lay leaders in our communities in North America, please take this advice from Rabbi Fass and please make it part of your agenda, reminding everybody how critical it is to keep Israel not just at the forefront in terms of news from Israel, but at the forefront in terms of it being the future home for the Jewish people. So that's number one. You could react to that or not. It's an important message. I know you've been outspoken on this issue, so I don't know if you want to address it now. The second thing I'll say, speaking about outspoken on certain issues, you've always stressed. See, now I'm really going to let the cat out of the bag. You've always stressed that you got to make Aliyah for positive reasons, and there's no reason to revert to any other reasons or any other agenda to move to Israel. However, Rabbi Fass, thank God you have a friend named Nachum Segal. Because Nachum Segal, over the next few years, you know, is wondering, is contemplating, what's my mission? What is my mission? You know, there are a couple of generations of people that I speak to directly, and there are other people around that I would love to address if given the opportunity. What would I say to them? And honestly, what I would say to them, Tony and Josh, is that we are now living in the United States that is in a very precarious state. It is in a very difficult situation. And if you in fact want quality of life for your children and grandchildren, we may be forced to have no other option but to go to the state of Israel. And while I'm on the topic, Tony and Josh, are you familiar with what happened two Fridays ago on East 14th Street in New York City in Union Square? Are either of you familiar with what happened? It was already Shabbos for you guys. Do you know what happened Friday afternoon two Fridays ago in Union Square in New York? Are you all familiar with this story? Because if not, I'm going to
talk. Is that the Nintendo story?
Yes.
Yes,
so you're familiar with it?
Yes.
I live in the area, as you know, just a mile away.
Right.
So a social media influencer got on to his 5 million followers and said, free gift, free Game Boy, game, whatever they call the games now, for everybody who shows up. Within minutes, there were 3,000 to 4,000 people in Union Square, very disappointed that there were no free games. And a riot ensued. And there was plenty of destruction, plenty of injuries, cops being assaulted, firecrackers being thrown at police officers. I mean, I could go on with the list of what happened. It was a terrible scene, and it took the police in New York City, a qualified police force, who wanted to respond, right? When you get to a riot at that level, someone said to me it was the biggest mobilization of the NYPD since 9/11. That's how crazy it was in terms of immediacy. So what did I gain from this? I'm sitting there Friday afternoon, taking care of, you know, dressing my foot and getting all my little things getting done before Shabbos. And I say to my wife, you know what I've learned from this little episode that we're watching on breaking news on Channel 4? I learned that somebody can go on social media and decide that they're going to have some fun and suggest to their followers, you know what? Let's go to this neighborhood and smash some car windows and assault men and women who are walking in the street and break some, you know, buildings' windows and, you know, and cause damage, maybe set something on fire and certainly, you know, destroy some businesses, et cetera, et cetera. I know what Kristallnacht was in our history. I know it very well, especially from my own relatives and certainly from all the footage and all the evidence that we have of it since then. But I will tell you that this has the potential, when someone now today goes on social media with an agenda against the Jewish people, God forbid, it has the potential to be even far worse than that. That's the lesson I learned Union Square two Fridays ago. So you continue with your positive message. That's why God put you both here, to keep the rah-rah, we've got to get to Israel and let's go and build the state and make the prophet's dreams and the prophet's prophecies come true. I'm going to include a different angle, that there's not much time left for the communities of the United States. I thank you for listening to my little
soliloquy.
Yes, now you have a preview.
Tony.
Go ahead.
No. I want you to respond first.
Look, I hear what you're saying. And I actually know the story. But there's many stories like that in the U.S., but all over the world. And you would see it in a mob robbery, which took place in the Nordstrom's in Los Angeles.
Another good example.
50 kids came in, took what they want, and left.
Helpless, innocent people standing there?
The police in Union Square, if you saw the video footage, they had giant pieces of plywood that somehow God gave them to them, or they would have had bottles and firecrackers in their heads. And they were all officers. They weren't just the man on the beat cops. They were officers, you know, high-ranking officers.
Riot control SWAT teams.
Forget about it. But your point is very simple. I think it's, for me, I don't know, you can ask Josh separately. Nefesh B'Nefesh is built out of a positive momentum, people running to Israel, from the U.S. running to Israel. They're not running, and they were never running away from America or the U.S. or Canada. You could see people, and there's Jews, have always been running away from some place at some time in their lives. Could that happen? Yes. Will it happen? Only God knows. But I can tell you something. What we've done here is we've paved the way to show people that there's an alternative. If you have an inkling, if you're worried, you can always come to Israel. You can always come to Israel if you're worried. You know, it's something that's very important, but you do it in a positive way. The message that you have in your head rolling around there, and the message that many of first-generation Americans rolling around in their heads are like, okay, you know, I've got to keep a suitcase packed and this
passport
and this,
ready
to go.
Right.
And by the way, you know, we have to be prepared.
Right.
I think in a lot of it depends what your background is and how you grew up in America. Let's say you always have that in the back of your mind. So we're just going to keep building the country with Olim from here and all over the world, whatever we can do.
And when they show up for any reason.
And for whatever reason they show up.
You'll be ready for it.
If they're running away or running to, we're going to be there with open arms. End the story, full stop. But yes, the Jews have a precarious history. People don't like us. And imagine, we're a very small percentage of the world population.
And the speed with which it happens.
And instant news, whether it's true or false, it's instant.
Correct.
And it's dangerous.
Rabbi Fass? At least give me permission to transmit this message. Let me say it.
Oh, 1,000%. I don't deny reality, and I don't have my head in the sand. I just, when we have these conversations, I hear my beloved grandfather, who was arrested the night of Kristallnacht in Fürth, Germany. And when my family, we attempted to make Aliyah 40 years ago, my parents and my siblings.
Close encounters, right?
My grandfather, when we told him that we were, when we told my grandparents that we wanted to make Aliyah, my grandfather started to tear up and he said, V'holichenu k'mimiut la'artzeinu. That was it. And I constantly remember that refrain of, you're moving to Israel, you're doing it upright. You're not running away, you're not fleeing. And as long as we can just cherish that gift and not have it tarnished, then for me, that is not just fulfillment of prophecy. It's the greatest gift that God has bestowed upon our generation. So as, unfortunately, current events show that we're tarnishing that purity of running towards something, but also the motivation. There's always a push and pull dynamic with any immigration study. There's opportunity and necessity. That's how you always categorize Aliyah. There's a necessity to flee. And here, we've, for 21 years, have been promoting opportunity. Opportunity could be optimism. Opportunity could be idealism. It could be professional growth, mobile growth, just value system. So all this conversation, it's very real. I'm not ignoring it. But every one of these conversations that you and I have, you know that it pains me.
Right.
Not that you're introducing something that I'm not aware of.
Right.
It just now introduces, instead of the opportunity, also a little element of necessity.
Right.
Now, right now, it might be a lowercase n of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid, it becomes a capital necessity. And then it's a very different dynamic and relationship between Israel and North America. Will it happen? Oh, Yodav. Well, I hope it doesn't. And I hope we all just embrace this gift with two arms and move forward. But I hope history doesn't repeat itself.
I tell you what, I do believe, though, that making sure Jews in the U.S. know that Israel exists, don't forget Israel, understand Israel, educate yourself about Israel, educate yourself about Judaism, and the education part of it will help tremendously for everything that we were just talking about. Because in the U.S., it's helped to know who you are and what you stand for as a Jew. And in Israel, it helps to know who you are and what you stand for as a Jew. And I remind you, again, that as a first-generation American and you know, people who perished, you know, my grandpa, whatever, in the Shoah, you have a different feeling than somebody who's been third, fourth
generation American.
It's a little different. And you just have to take that all in consideration. So it's like on this plane. Everyone here is making Aliyah, and I guarantee you, you'll find, of the 200 and something people, you'll find many, 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 many different reasons while they're doing it. And they also, you'll find out that, you know, in the back of their minds, yeah, I'm doing this for my family because in the future, you know, I'll show them the way how to do it. And if I do it, they'll do it too.
Right. And I think the balance is the quality of life issue. In other words, if we're not going to lean a lot on one side of this issue or the other, at least we all have to acknowledge that the better life for the majority of Jews, I can't say all of them, the majority of Jews in the diaspora is going to be in Israel, not where they are at the moment. So I thank both of you very much. Thank you for this opportunity.
We thank you.
Thank you.
We thank you for being a brother. We thank you for being that voice. We thank you for the opportunity. We thank you for sharing our vision. We thank you for making this trip, which I know is challenging, and you're turning right around and going back, and for not missing it, and for clearing your schedules always for us, and we love you dearly.
Thank you.
By the way, about your Aliyah, there's a reason, a very special reason, that you didn't make Aliyah yet, because you have a very special job.
I appreciate that.
And without you doing that, think of the thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who have listened to you over the years, and how many of those people, because of what you've done in the last, whatever, 20 years sitting on these flights with us, you've encouraged them and introduced them and allowed them and thought about making Aliyah, and they made Aliyah. So you, my friend, whether you didn't make Aliyah, you're a heck of an ambassador, and you showed and gave the people the path. Because if you can take a poll today, and people would send into your webpage or whatever you got going on, your social media, how many people heard about Aliyah and Nefesh B'Nefesh and Aliyah from Nachum Siegel in the morning, a.m. in the... And you'll be surprised how many thousands and thousands.
It also is going to take us 2 to 3 years to build your studio. So, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
These days are my fast.
Okay.
They go up really quickly. See, I can't even use that as an excuse. You just gave me an amazing excuse. And I can't. I have to face reality. Enough with the excuses. Mm-hmm. The temporary studio already exists across from your office at Nefesh B'Nefesh.
Yes.
The plan, please God, is that a permanent one will be part of the future there, which is amazing.
Amen. Kenya Retsa.
And Tony, thank you. That was amazingly heartwarming what you said, and much appreciated. Thank you so much.
It's the truth.
I appreciate it, and just to be recognized like that is incredible. Thank you both, and mazal tov to both of you. 64.
Thank you so much.
64th flight.
Yeah. As I climb off of Tony's lap right now.
For those of you keeping track, we're at 64 with the pictures to prove it that Tony and Josh shared the guest couch.
It's a guest couch.
Let's see if there's a chiropractor on the plane.
My leg is numb, but it's a guest couch. I appreciate it, you know.
There's got to be a masseuse and a chiropractor 100%. Back there. There has to be. Come on.
Physical therapist, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
For sure.
More coming
thank
up.
Thank you.
A pleasure, thank you. More coming up. It is a Wednesday morning edition of JM in the AM. We're literally on a plane. We're literally on the flight with Nefesh B'Nefesh, with hundreds of Olim. Heading to the Holy Land. How incredible is that? Well, frankly, it's pretty remarkable and incredible.